Thank you. And thank you, girls. Great job. I call it the Bible song. A few years ago, I found it somewhere, I think, in BibleTeachersMailbox.com. And I decided to make it my class theme. We sing it every Sunday morning or Wednesday night, whichever one I happen to be teaching. Because I think we ought to brainwash our kids to know that the Bible is God's Word, and we need to read it every day, and it needs to be our food. And don't let me forget, I have these to hand you at the end. I hope everybody is really enjoying this time this week and finding a way to relax and enjoy and grow and be refreshed. And I hope you'll take at least one thing from every lesson home with you. That's sometimes for retreats or lectureships or whatever, if I only take one thing, I've got one more thing in my basket to help me. Some of you don't know me. I was raised in a small Texas town. My whole family, aunts and uncles, grandparents, and everybody remembers the church as far back as I know. And I think I'm really, really blessed that way. I know I missed out on some things, but that's okay. We weren't perfect, but we were growing. But one of the things I do remember my parents would comment every now and then, whatever you do, don't marry a preacher. Now, I don't think they had anything against the Lord's work. It's not that. They just knew that the preacher is and his wife are in a fishbowl, and they were very private people. So when I married a biologist. He was a snake person. My first pets were snakes, but that's okay with me because I'm not really a pet person. And snakes you can put in a cage and feed them once a month and they're okay. But anyway, we were very much for being very involved in the church. And before we knew it, we were in New York, Boston, Texas, and working with a congregation, trying to grow a congregation in Western New York. And then he wanted to be a preacher, and I was, let's not. And we've got young children. We can't do that right now. We just can't do that. I'm not proud of that, but that's where I was. And so he put it off, but he wasn't happy, and eventually he became the personal work director of the congregation where we were. And we had a congregation in the South that was supporting us. And we began to grow that direction. He was working with a mature preacher who'd been preaching for 25 years, and he took him under his wing. John was talking about having a mentor. They were our mentors. He taught him how to study. He taught him how to visit, how to go to the hospital, how to put out a bulletin, all those things, and some more, some of the things you won't learn in the preacher school. But anyway, it was very valuable study, very valuable lesson. And the more he got into it, the more he wanted to do, and he went to a personal evangelist in training school for 1 year, and then we worked in Ohio for a couple of years, and then he decided he wanted to be a pulpit preacher. And so he looked for a job that way. And we went to work for the congregation on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and there were 13 people, and we made 18. And so we all grew together. We all learned how. There were we still had somebody in the South supporting us, and there were, of course, no elders, but we were there for 11 years, and when we left, they owned their own church building. They had elders and many local native members, so that it wasn't a transplant from the South, which is difficult in the North. I wanted you to know of this because I was very like I said, came from a family where we were private people. In my high school and college, if I had to stand up in front of class, my whole brain might leave me. I would have nothing to be able to come out of my mouth. I'm pretty shy to start with, and I made give people the impression that I'm stuck up because I don't talk, can't think of what to say. You know, you have to get to know me before you know that that's not really what I mean by the, what you see. Just in case that's where you are, you can grow and you can change some of that. I know there are some of you who made up your mind a long time ago that you wanted to be a teacher's wife, and that's what you went looking for. And that's wonderful. I've known people like that too. But what is your job if you're a preacher's wife? And you're not, if you're not a preacher's wife, we'll all get to the same place anyway. What's the job description? Is there one in the Bible? Pardon? Did you say the lost? I think of Luke 8, 1 through 3, where there were women who followed Jesus and his apostles, and they ministered to their needs out of what they had. They were women who were servants, ministered to Jesus and his apostles. Titus 2, 1 through 5, you studied some of that yesterday. It speaks of things which will benefit sound doctrine. That the aged women be reverent in demeanor, not slanderers, not enslaved to much wine, teachers of that which is good. That they train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sober-minded, chaste, workers at home, kind, being in subjection to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. 1 Timothy 3:11, the wife of elders or the wife of an elder or deacon is to be grave, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. These are God's description of women. If they would suit any women, they would serve. Speak to women as the wife of a preacher also. 1 Timothy 5, 3 through 16 give us more insight in what God expects from women. Words like hospitality and good works are used there. 1 Peter 2:12 and 15 and 3:16 talk about how people from outside will say all manner of evil against you. They will criticize you, but that they can be put to silence by a Christian's good work. So who we are can be an influence on other people outside. Eve was to be a suitable helper for Adam, and that can tell us a lot, though it doesn't mean that she only has to work at home. But it needs, you need to be a suitable helper for your husband. One woman I was talking to get insight into what preacher's wives might need to hear, might want to hear, she said there was a time when she was very involved in everything that went on around the building, putting out the bulletins, and I don't know, almost being church secretary, I don't know. But she was involved in everything, and feeling the pressure and the frustration. And one day she asked her husband, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "I want you to keep the home nice and take care of the kids. That's what I want you to do." So you don't have to be involved in everything to be the support that your husband needs. So it could be that being what he needs, like Eve was made for Adam to be his, the helper that was suitable for him, that is your most important thing, and like John said, working together for the kingdom. In your handout, you have a color page like this, and I have decided that this could be maybe any shape. It doesn't have to be square. Sometimes I think they might be really odd shapes. But I saw this illustration I think from Jane McWhorter a few years ago, and she's written books that some of you may have read. This is you, right here, in the center. And that doesn't mean we're here to make you self-centered, but it's to fill your storehouse so that you will have to give. It's to help set priorities. In our lives, there are too many important things to do every day, more important things than we can possibly do. So we need to find balance in all things, which is not always easy. But we need to start with ourselves. Are you taking care of yourself? Are you studying the Word every day? Are you keeping yourself spiritually healthy in your prayer life? Are you keeping yourself physically fit? Are you exercising enough? Eating the right foods? Are you taking care of your family's health? Are you keeping your mind and your emotion healthy? Are you learning and loving and laughing? Those are all important to keep you in good balance. And then when your storehouse is full, you have to give to your family. And when you have time, when you, your family is taken care of, then you have time to give to the church. And when the church is taken care of, then you have time to give to the community. And at various points in your life, you'll have different times to do different things. If you have small children, you may be taking care of your family. And that may be about all you have to do. There was a time when I had two small ones in diapers, and I thought all I did all day long, every day, was either change a diaper, feed somebody, put somebody down for a nap, get somebody up from a nap, change another diaper, feed somebody else. And that was all I did all day long, every day. And it was frustrating for a time that I couldn't get involved in other things. But I knew that that wouldn't last forever, and though it seemed like those few months were a really long time, it wouldn't. After a while, they'd grow up. Then you can do other things. So these bands may be different shapes, and they may overflow into each other at various times in your life. Sometimes you may be taking care of young children and aging parents or grandparents. Sometimes you're really tied up. Sometimes you will have time to get involved in politics or the community, or maybe you can do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But if you use all of yourself out there, you've used up all your storeroom, you don't have to give. Jesus' example of being a servant meant he used himself, but he also knew when he had to take quiet time, knew when he could stop by and see Mary and Martha and relax for a while, or go off with his best friends for a little while, Peter, James, and John. And sometimes he would get up really early in the morning to spend time in prayer alone. Sometimes he would stay up all night long in prayer. But he took time to center himself so he would have to be a servant to all. So let's visualize a minute. Suppose that you have found your balance for the time. You are feeling okay. You're doing the very best you can to keep yourself centered. Your family is taken care of. You are reaching out. You're involved in the church, in saving souls, in teaching Bible classes. And everything seems to be running smoothly, and you feel like you're doing pretty well. You know, you meet Bible standards. Feel like that for about now? But can you avoid criticism? You can't please all the people all the time. Some of the people you can't please any of the time. In Matthew 11, 18 and 19, Jesus said, John came neither eating or drinking, and people said he had a demon. And the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, he's a gluttonous man and a wrongdoer. There's just no way you can please some people. in Matthew 5, 11 and 12, Jesus said, blessed are ye when men shall persecute you, revile you, and say all manner against you falsely, and that's the key. In 1 Peter 2 and 3, we talked about people from outside being critical of Christians and how you can put them to silence by your good work. John 15:20, Jesus said, a servant is not greater than the master. They persecuted me, and they'll also persecute you. And Luke 12:49-53, Jesus came to cause division. He just said that that's what's going to happen. That mother-in-laws will be against the daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law will be against the mother-in-law, and the father and the son will be at odds. Those things are just going to happen. So, what do we do with it? What's your reaction when somebody criticizes you for something? That's a good way to handle it, to start. That's a good way to start. Okay, it could be that your first reaction is, what right have you to tell me what to do? I am doing what I think is right. You're the bad guy here. Sometimes I think being totally oblivious is a good way to handle some things. Just don't even know that that happened. There were times... We had four children. Two boys were born to us, and we adopted two girls. And the two girls are black. One of them is biracial, but their skin is dark. And one of the girls used to tell me how people gave us ugly looks when we were in the store together. I didn't notice. It didn't matter to me what they thought. And I thought, well, I escaped some of that because I just didn't notice that people gave a dirty look. There are some advantages at times to just not knowing that somebody's remark may have been hurtful and you just don't notice it. That works sometimes. But not all the time. Sometimes it's better to just let things roll off. One of the women at work is often telling me that somebody that came up to her desk was just so rude. And it could be that they were having a bad day. Some people are likely to say, you sent me the wrong bill. You did not do this right. Instead of, what is this about? So people, do we all do that sometimes? Does something come out backwards out of your mouth? Not what you intended to say? Or wasn't the best way to handle it? Sometimes people may take something that you say the exact opposite of what you meant to be saying. And some that happens, things coming our way sometimes too. Maybe somebody didn't know how to say it and it just came out. And it sounded rude or it sounded hurtful. Some of those things you can just let roll off. It's not me. That's your problem. We'll work this out. But I don't have to take it personally. And that can go a long way in the church as well as everywhere else. And if you know that somebody has something against you, whose responsibility is it to get together and talk about it? Okay. Is it only mine? If somebody has something against me, whose responsibility is it to come and talk? Do they have a responsibility also? If I have something against someone, whose responsibility is it? So no matter, pardon? Right. But the scriptures that say both ways. In Matthew 5, Jesus said, if you come to the altar with your gift and you realize, you remember, you understand that somebody has something against you, you need to leave your gift and go work it out. And in Matthew 18, if you know that someone has sinned against you, then you need to go to them and work it out. So both sides have a responsibility. What happens most of the time? Both of them say, we're not going to talk about it. And that shouldn't be, but that's the way we do it. But we need to remember that if we will talk things out, we can all grow better. So suppose you are rocking along and you have good friends and things are going well, you think, but somebody thinks you have a best friend and you're ignoring other people in the congregation. You have a best friend and you shouldn't have a best friend. Are you angry? Are you sad and depressed? Oh me, I can't do anything right. Not even have a friend. I think I'll just quit. Or do you find that good self-esteem you've been working on trying to build? And what Betty said, okay, is this something that's really true? Am I acting like I have a best friend and ignoring other people? Is it a valid argument? Is it a valid criticism? What are the details that's really bothering this person? And what can be done to fix it or change it or help?
I want to ask a second opinion. Not like a doctor, I guess. But when my husband was preaching, well, there was this lady in the church, and she was an older lady, and she did harass me about the way that my child acted in worship. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, since she was 3 months old, she'll make this noise, and she'll go, like that. And I call her concentration noise because she doesn't really focus on something. So, and she doesn't realize she's doing it until you say you're making your noise, and then she'll be like, oh, okay. But when she was young, when we were in preaching school, I would bring books during worship for her to look at to keep her occupied. Well, she would start making that noise because she was really looking at the book. Well, this older lady would come up to you every time after worship. She'd say, you need to take her out and spank her. And I was like, okay, so I felt really bad. So I started taking her out and spanking her. And my daughter just looked at me like, what did I do wrong? Because she didn't know she was making the noise. And it scared me up inside. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this other lady, older lady, who was in the church. And I asked her about it. I said, she keeps coming to me and she's getting on to me about my child. And, I was just in tears. And she said, don't worry about it. She said, she picks one wife out of every class to harass them about the way they raise their children. And she said, you're the one she's chosen out of this class. And she said, ignore it. She said, do your best. Try to keep your daughter quiet so that she won't grab you. But it really helped. And I learned from that if someone criticizes me, I try to find a second opinion and get a different perspective. And I've gone to friends, my husband, and said, is this really true about me? Am I really...
And, I have my circle that I really trust their opinion, and if they're like, yeah, you do that, then, I hold up the criticism as more valid, and they're like, ah, no, that's kind of, I guess, the opinion, like a doctor, I guess. Well, that's true. Second opinion is really good, and sometimes the second opinion needs to be from the Bible. Where am I in relation to what God has said? And there are ways to handle people like that. I'll tell you that I'm probably not the best one to do it because that's another one. I'm really good with numbers and putting things in order and cleaning up the house. But personal relationships sometimes just go right over my head. I don't get it. But I do try real hard to learn from people who do get it because what I want to do is be caring and concerned and considerate of other people. But sometimes you just say, thank you for your concern. I appreciate your trying to help. Yes, I understand she is loud. I agree with you. And you may have to do that every Sunday. Well, thank you so much for your concern. And that's other things. You know, what happens if somebody is upset by the way your husband preaches? What happens if your whole family is under fire? You know, they don't like the way your kids behave. They, and that may be the way it comes to you. They say, who is they? Who do you go talk to if they say? What happens to you that puts pressure on you, that makes you feel bad, that's hard for you to handle? Sometimes people have come in and thought we weren't having church services because you weren't offering an invitation. Well, where we happened to be at that time, it wasn't the custom. Everybody knew, because of the way we always did things, anybody who was connected knew that Christ's invitation was open at all times, and if anybody wanted to be baptized, it was likely to be late at night or early in the morning, or we would take our Bible class time and have a baptism and then go on with the rest of the services. Sunday night, as a custom, we had started having it more like a class and did not necessarily offer a formal invitation. There's no formal invitation at the end of service in the Bible. But some people were being critical that we weren't doing it right. And that can put a strain on the whole congregation. And it can make you second guess yourself, make you have pressure between you. Is it worth going on? Do we just give up? I'm no good. Do we bend to every whim, or do we not? And those decisions have to be made. So you have to think, where are you? Who do you belong to? Who's really important? But you also need to remember 1 Corinthians 9, 16 through 23, where Paul talks about being all things to all people. To a Jew, I became a Jew, that I might win souls. So our goal is to be an influence for good for other people. So what do you bend and what do you not bend? Where is your self-esteem? Where is your dependence? And who do you depend on?
1 Corinthians 2 has begun here, perhaps, was to ask yourself, was God object to our offering the invitation every time? Is that wrong? And should we just alleviate the problem if those people in particular were going to be a part of
Right. To make sure that we're changing the things that can be changed to influence the most people, to help the most people. So when something comes, there will be times when you will not, maybe you're not feeling your best anyway for other reasons. We all have ups and downs, and there will be times when you're down, and somebody piles one more thing on that criticizes you for something that may be a total surprise, and your first reaction is to think, I might as well give up. I'm no good. I'll just quit. But keep that little voice going in your head that tells you otherwise. Talk to yourself. Talk about who you belong to, who you are. Your behavior is not because of who you are, but whose you are. I'm not in this place because I'm so good. I'm in this place because I want to serve God. And that's who I belong to, and that's who's going to help me. Do your visualizing, and that has helped me a lot for various things through the years. And it helps me be here right now, and I hope it's helping you for me to be here. But like to go do a personal Bible study. I might have to see myself remembering the scriptures that I've studied. See myself remembering answers to questions that I don't know yet. See myself handling it smoothly. Visualize yourself talking to someone on a reasonable level. You ask questions. What is it about the situation that bothers you? What did I do wrong? What is it about my relationships that is causing you trouble? Agree as much as possible. Yes, I see that can be a problem. Yes, I do spend a lot of time with that person. Okay, I see that maybe I need to be spending more time with other people. Agree wherever you can, and then see what you can work out. One of the problems that I've seen in my experiences is that a preacher's wife probably cannot have a real, true, one best friend in the group. You need to spread yourself out, and the preacher does too. Sometimes it's very difficult for them to have friends, for us to have friends. If it looks like we're not open to everybody, you need to spread yourself, be involved in all kinds of groups and all kinds of relationships. That's the way you will influence and help the most people. You do have to have good friends, but if there comes a time when you need to get something off your chest, when you need feedback, when you need to talk about something that's going on in your family, in your relationship with your husband maybe, or somebody in the congregation, who do you talk to? Can you talk to somebody else in the congregation about things that are going on in the preacher's family? Most people can't handle that. Most people can't. It might blow up and cause more problems than you have to start with. But it could be that what you need is an outside source. Somebody far away to talk things out with. Sometimes husband and wife can be that for each other, but sometimes you need somebody else too. Paul wrote about all the concerns he had and the concerns of all the congregations. He was concerned about everybody that he studied with. And so the more places he went, the more places he taught, the more people he had, and he talked about the weight that was on him. And you'll have that. And when you do, who do you get to help you carry the weight when you need God with skin on? So you may need to make your best friends somewhere else. Some of my best friends in a congregation turned out to be the one whose husband got most upset with my husband, and then they disappeared and my best friend left. And that hurt a lot. But I didn't know a thing to do about it. There were lots and lots of discussions, but stubbornness doesn't change.
Somewhat insulated. She has to make herself insulated and not just choose one person. And my example is this. When we moved to St. Marcus, a young girl in the congregation in the seventh grade who came to my house and wanted to be friendly, and I could help her with schoolwork and things. And she said, "Mother and I were talking about it when you and Rose Charlie came, and we wondered who gets to do your bit." People watch for that.
Uh-huh.
And they're devastated. Not that we were so great, but that's the way they were there. And we had to be careful about it. And some who wanted to be good friends weren't trustworthy people.
Right.
And then quickly, I think this comes up in my talk tomorrow, so I won't give this example fully. But she mentioned, be careful about talking to someone in the congregation and dealing with matters that you don't want to get around. You talk somebody out with, and we preached, Norm preached at a congregation where I was wary of someone who wanted to be close.
Mm-hmm.
And ask me these questions, you know, about my personal relationship with my relationship with my husband, and things, and I knew then, it can be a different thing. But when we left there, she made major trouble for the next preacher.
Oh.
His wife wasn't aware, wasn't careful. And then the woman made more of what the preacher's wife told her, and she got to the elders, and I think I told you. I think y'all, I'm not a preacher's wife, but I also see it as if the preacher's wife has two or three good friends, and they're always instigating something together, like, we're going to start this, or we're going to run our BBS like this, and it's always those three people, it's you get the credit. And it's not that they're really trying to take anybody out of the group or you know, but they're go-getters, and I think you have to be careful with that. Somebody else said, well, I would like to help with that, you know, when it's going to be, but, you know.
You really do need to be all-inclusive as much as possible, but you also need to remember that you have access to information that must not go anywhere else. So you have to make sure that you can keep your mouth closed. In wrapping this up, what I really would like for you to remember most is that even when criticism comes your way, you are a treasured child of God. You're adopted into His family because He wants you. And you're a child of a king. You're a princess. You're also a slave or a servant. Just as your master showed himself to be a servant, you are too. No job is above you, and no job is beneath you. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. So behave like a member of God's family, that the word of God be not blasphemed, with the goal of saving souls. If you can develop this kind of thinking, you will more often be able to act as if you have good self-esteem. And that may be even when you don't feel like you have good self-esteem. And your self-esteem doesn't just depend on where you are right now. It depends on the genes that you developed, the chemistry going on in your body, and the way you were raised. All of those things put together. Just because you're Christian doesn't mean you're always going to be feeling good about yourself. All kinds of things happen to us in this life to change that. But you can act as if you have that self-esteem more often and be able to talk to somebody who has criticism and work out whatever the problems might be. Do what you can do, but remember not to worry. And I want each one of you to have one of these. This is another one of those things that helps me through all kinds of things. Lord, help me to remember that nothing is going to happen to me today that you and I can't handle together. And I had it on the wall on the stairs going up and down. So I saw it every day, several times a day. Don't want to help pass those out. And look for balance. And I think that's a difficult thing. Thank you very much for your attention, and I hope you have a good rest of the week.